first political reaction coming from the SDLP this morning and Colin McGrath. Morning to you, Colin.
Good morning, Stephen.
What's your reaction to this?
Well, it seems a bit draconian and it seems a bit severe. And it would also potentially, I think, direct us towards a culture of mistrust and fear that there is amongst the DUP, that their representatives are going to go on and speak in different directions and have different views and policies. I think the point was well made there. We're all elected to represent our constituents, but we all accept that there's party lines that you have to adhere to. But delivering £500 and higher fines just seems a bit much.
Has the SDLP got a policy in this? Would your party? Well, your party's already told us you would not do this. You do not do it.
No, we don't have any of that. We have a system, as I say, based on trust amongst the representatives. We would certainly try to contact our press office to let them know that we're going on various shows, just to be able to, you know, to be able to work with each other and to sort of, and, you know, you get a brief of the party policy just so that you know exactly your facts and your figures for going on air. That's what you as a journalist would expect people to come on and do. But say you could have instances where you get a phone call, or it could be something that happens in the middle of the night and you get contacted by the press and you go on to give a response. And I think we do that on the basis of trust.
I think there's a question as you're all reacting to this story this morning, 03030 80 55 55. There is a question as to when you see or read or hear about an elected representative in a democracy speaking to you as a member of the public, do you look at that individual, and are you listening to what that individual believes in, the promises that that individual politician is making to you, or do you accept that they might not believe in a word that they're saying, but it is the central message of the party, and that's how a party keeps discipline? How do we know when we see the next member of the DUP on television, or hear them on the radio, or read what they're saying in a newspaper? How do we know that they are not saying it under the duress of a financial fine unless they stick to the party line? Commentator Malachy O'Doherty joining us now, 03030 80 55 55, if you want to react to this breaking story this morning. What are your thoughts, Malachy?
Well, I think the party members are being humiliated. I think that you would wonder at anyone with any self-respect wanting to subject themselves to such a system. I mean, the very idea is that politicians try to canvass your vote by coming to your doorstep and talking to you and trying to impress you with their own personal integrity. And what we're hearing this morning is that personal integrity counts for nothing. The person.
Well, that's too far, isn't it?
Well, it's not. What you're describing is a situation in which politicians are treated as glove puppets by a party machine. Now, we know that parties want to be consistent. They want to have a clear line, particularly when they're involved in inter-party negotiations and something. But, I mean, if a party that behaves like this is more dictatorial in spirit than democratic. And you know, why would it matter to me if a party is like that, whether the candidate that comes to my door is Emma Little Pengele or a you know, a dog with a sash on, you know, or whatever, a robot? It doesn't matter, because all that person needs to be is a mouthpiece for a party machine. So yeah, I think it is something that humiliates party politicians and which demeans and cheapens political life in this region.
So how does a party keep discipline?
Well, you know, you never keep full discipline. Look at the state of the Tory party at the moment, you know, intensely involved in negotiations on Brexit, and yet we are hearing this constant round of diverse opinions, and that is the norm of political life. I'm sure Theresa May would love it if dissenters within her party, if David Davis and Boris Johnson and others could be reined in and told to shut up and fined if they wouldn't speak their minds. But she knows that is an inevitable part of a political process. That is how a political party works, and that is what you get if you bring in people who have gifts of their own to offer the party, rather than people who are merely pliant and will do your bidding.
Alison Morris, stay there, Malachy. Alison Morris joining us this morning from the Irish News.
Good
Good morning.
Good morning to you. And Kelly Armstrong now joining us from the Alliance Party. Morning to you, Kelly.
Morning, Stephen.
Would your party ever countenance fining elected representatives for not sticking to what the press office wants you to say?
Absolutely not. It's not in our constitution, never has been and never will be.
Why not?
Because when we set party policy, it's done on a democratic basis. We all get together, we discuss it, we debate it. Anyone who has any issues with policy that's being proposed has the opportunity to bring forward their input at that stage. Once we agree policy, democratically it's voted on and that's the way we take it forward. But the last thing that we want to do is to stifle people. People vote for individuals who have, you know, colourful lives and come out with stuff. I'm not the most polished on air. Our media people probably have a heart attack every time I speak to you, Stephen. But people want to buy people. People want to engage with their elected politicians, their local elected politicians. To have the thought of a fine or some very draconian disciplinary procedure hanging over your head's not good.
I'm looking. The Nolan Show has possession of one of the letters that Timothy Johnson, the chief executive, has sent to one of his DUP colleagues, in which he tells this person, you are hereby fined, and there's an amount of money on it, and they are told to make the cheque payable to the Democratic Unionist Party in a sealed envelope to the Stormont Chief Whip, or they're told to send it directly into the party's bank account. Now, the question I have around this is one about, Alison Morris, if we can bring you in here, is one about how our democracy works in Northern Ireland. What about the what-if scenario that if there were to be an elected representative, DUP representative in Northern Ireland, who felt that there was an issue so strongly in the public interest that they had to speak up about it, but they didn't have £1,000. They couldn't afford the fine. Does that actually mean that that information would never get into the public domain without the permission of Central Command Press Office?
I think the issue in that situation is if you're a politician and you have information that you believe, and I suppose we're talking about a sort of whistleblower type situation here, you will find another way to get it into the media and you will find another way. And we know that sometimes politicians use quite Machiavellian ways to get their information across. The thing about a fine is it sounds quite draconian, sounds like a dictatorship. But also what I was interested in that interview was the boycott of your show, because as a journalist, we know all the time that we get situations where press officers refuse to answer our questions, or some journalists are blackballed because they ask too many awkward questions. And that is also used by way in many political parties to try and stifle information getting to the public. And I always say there's more press officers working in the NIO in Stormont than there is journalists working in Northern Ireland at the minute, and they're not there to give us information. In many cases, they're there to stop us getting information. And you have heard it from the DUP insider that they are purposely boycotting your show, and I would suggest they're probably boycotting quite a few other journalists who have asked too many awkward questions in relation to situations that they didn't want getting out.
Well, this
parties need discipline, and they do need discipline. And if they don't have discipline, there's mayhem, and there has to be some consequences for sort of renegade members who go off on a solo run on one of their own. But that can be done by a series of different ways. And as Kelly said, if you have a strong leader, and if you're someone who's willing to take other people's views on board, and if you're in a party where there's collective meetings and everyone's views are taken into consideration when they're forming policy, well, then there's much less likelihood of there being dissent in that party anyway.
Malik O'Toole, what would happen if there were an MLA who was desperate to say it themselves for whatever reason, that they had knowledge which they wanted to deliver to the community themselves, and they didn't have a spare £1,000? if they had, it's £100. It's our understanding it's £100, then £500, then £1,000 for the third so-called offence. What would happen?
You wonder how the party can enforce those fines. If I am fined by a court and I don't pay my fine, then there's a follow-up procedure where I may end up in jail. So I don't know, you know, if a DUP MLA doesn't pay their fine, what happens? Presumably they get a severe talking to, or they maybe get deselected further on. I do think, and we know this, that journalists and politicians talk behind the door, and information gets out and leaks get out. But very few, I would think, get out from the DUP and from Sinn Féin, who are, if anything, tighter in their procedures, so they don't use those methods. I think the danger with this is, you know, it suggests a party that does not trust its own people. you know, and therefore it suggests that at the heart of that party is a cabal who want to keep all the decision-making to themselves, and that is totally counter to the very idea of party democracy. That's not what party democracy is about. Party democracy is about, you know, bringing together, you know, the range of opinions of you know, representative of a vast electorate, and the bigger the spread of the electorate, the better, you know, and bringing that to some coherence and representing it. It's not about, you know, just a few people at the very heart of a party working out the way they want to carry everybody with them and lashing the whip over the heads of the masses. But that seems to be the instinct of the DUP, and to be fair, it also seems to be the instinct of Sinn Féin, which has repeatedly over the past few years disciplined councillors and had councillors resign because they were uncomfortable with relationships with the party.
Here's Brian in Anderson's time. Morning to you, Brian.
Well, I mean, I just heard the story, but there's three words that come into my mind is arrogance, contempt and dictatorship. And I don't see why, I don't understand why everybody is surprised, because that's what comes across from the DUP. I've said it all the time.
Well, they would say they're trying to keep a clear, coherent message to the public.
I know people have, politicians have they follow the whip and so forth and all that, but if anybody does step their lane, okay, they're suspended or whatever, you know, would not find. Now, if an MP or a councillor connected with the DUP wants to say something very important that's to do with society and so forth, he could be stopped from doing that there. So that's a form of dictatorship. You can't say that there. And politicians join parties and get involved for the good of the people. That is not. It's a form of dictatorship, Stephen. That's what it boils down to. I mean, I can't think of any other word. You can't speak your mind, and that's what it boils down to. Ridiculous, so it is. But as I said, people are not surprised. People wouldn't be surprised once they hear this.
It's when you say that out loud, they can't speak their mind.
Yeah,
they can speak their mind, but only with permission of central command.
Up to a point.
The central press office.
If you feel that something is very important to your constituents and to the greater Northern Ireland, you have to go and get permission now.
Correct.
And they turn around and say, oh, sorry, you can't say that. Oh, we can't. Now, say it or you'll be fined. That's dictatorship.
And I think the story, and look, I don't want to dwell on this, but the story that you're also hearing this morning is that some elected representatives have said to us that, you know, that the DUP despise this programme because of our RHI coverage, and those representatives are stopped from getting permission from the DUP for coming on this programme because they don't like this programme because of coverage we've done.
So when I can count with one hand how many DUP representatives have been on your show. The important people never come on to your show. Never come on.
Well, and that's the prerogative of the DUP, and if that's how they want to react because of a story we've done, then, you know, we'll continue the journalism. That's what we'll continue to do. Alison Morris?
This happens quite often. I don't know whether the public know, but there's quite often that you would put a query into a political party and they would either refuse to come back, or you would contact the representatives and say, look, could you run that past the press office first? And that's quite normal because there is a control. And I think a lot of times it is because there is a central line. And sometimes when you get people, they can get a bit excited and go off what the party policy is. And sometimes that's fine and it works quite well and it's quite efficient. But in other times it does take away the personal, the sort of personality of a person and why they're elected. So a lot of times people like the fact that their elected representative is a bit outspoken and a bit of a renegade, you know, and doesn't speak, you know, like a robot from the party policy. But I think there's a few things in relation to that. What we can't see with the DUP is, and we know from the February deal, that they didn't inform their membership and they didn't sell their membership and they didn't prepare their membership for what was being discussed. And what this shows is that the power of the SPAD, and I think that the RHI inquiry, while we have to wait a very long time to see the outcome of that, is it has shown the amount of control and the amount of power that SPADs have. And I think that when we come back, and if there ever is a stormont again, that role needs to be looked at, because those people are not elected. That job isn't even tendered for. Those people are chosen. you know, it's not as if you can apply for a job to be a SPAD and it's advertised, you know, in the local newspaper and then the employment pages of the Irish News. They're chosen, they're picked. They can't be sacked unless by the party. They can't be sacked for any kind of misconduct like a politician would be. They're not advertised for, they're highly paid, and what we can see here is they have a degree of power that is in some cases beyond even what the person to the public
has. Well, the DP have said, of course, in their statement that they're operating under a constitution and a code of conduct for its members, which was passed by the Central Executive Committee of the party. John and Newton Abbey. Morning, John.
Morning, John.
Morning, John. Stephen. Go ahead.
Stephen, one of your followers call it a dictatorship. They call it discipline. I mean, if a professional footballer says something outside the remit of the club, what happened? He gets fined 2 weeks. Is that his freedom of speech being taken away?
Well, of course, you're comparing, surely, John, two very different things there. If a professional footballer, you know, is saying something outside of their club, it doesn't actually affect your life. You're talking here about elected representatives who stand up and say, vote for me, this is what I stand for as an individual and my party. But this is what you don't vote for DUP on a ballot paper. You vote for an individual name, John. And the difference between a footballer saying it is, you know, you could now have a member of the DUP not appearing in the media because they don't agree with their party policy, but maybe they want to change it. Or maybe they want to tell you what they believe in. And unless they have £100, £500 or £1,000 in their back pocket, there is now a disincentive for them to do, a financial disincentive, John, for them to tell you what they really think.
Stephen, all these MLAs and MPs, before they joined the DUP, knew party politics. They knew that if they did something outside party lane, they were going to get fined. They know that. It's got nothing to do with... And another point is, I believe that the DUP hierarchy are necking on your show for one simple reason. It's because the BBC seems to go out of their way, they got to dig at the DUP.
Well, obviously, we're trying to be fair to all sides. And if the DUP don't want to come on the Nolan Show, we've still got the very important people at the heart of this show, and that is the people.
And people
like you, John. And people like others, whether you're supportive or critical of any political party in this country, you're very welcome on air. Let's pause there. We'll get the news. We'll come back to more of your calls. Alex in Lisburn. Morning, Alex.
Morning. No, I just listened to the show and I had heard rumours of this before. But it makes you wonder what sort of people actually stand for the DUP and that they're prepared to, you know, they walk into the office like a wee boy and say, write the cheque. Because they actually spoke out of their mind and said what they thought. It shows you, it makes you wonder what sort of politicians they are. But the other
what
thing
do you mean by that?
Well, it's just that. Can you imagine Boris Johnson doing that? Can you imagine some of the big politicians doing? Can you imagine David Trimble doing that? Or even in the Ulster Union, Jim Rogers, Jim Dillon, even councillors doing that? They wouldn't do it. They have too much self respect. They have too much respect for their own opinion. You know, these people are. You know, the other point I want to make is this here. When you read about RHI and what it's going to cost us and the mistakes made, what fines were paid there? I mean, when Arlene Foster didn't read her brief, has she paid a fine? Has she had to mortgage the house to pay the fine? Of course not. It shows you where the priorities lie. If you make a mistake and you cost the people of the country a fortune, you bring in a scheme that's going to cost us millions, you get away with it. You're still employed by the party. But you speak out of turn. You say something against the party's interests, and you're fined. It's party before country. It's a classic case of where the interests of the party are more important than the interests of the country. And the RHI scandal shows that when you have people
you should wait for Sir Patrick Coughlan, the chair of the RHI inquiry, to issue his determination based on fact as to what happened when and where. And you can look at all of that information on the RHI website, rhiinquiry.org, or the BBC News NI website. And you shouldn't draw conclusions because we're only halfway through the evidence, Alex. But it is a statement of fact that Andrew Crawford inappropriately released documents that he shouldn't have done. If you follow through what happened after he did that, after the party knew he did that. He is still, you know, he's Diane Dodds researcher. The DUP's Diane Dodds.
That's the point.
And that's the point. That's the point I think you're making. But
that's the point I'm making.
But before drawing conclusions about RHI, let's wait for what the RHI inquiry actually concludes. But what you're essentially saying this morning is, what are these people made of who actually accept and pay the fines?
Yes, I would. Yes, I would say so. Yes, if you, I mean, if you go into politics, politics appeals to opinionated people. People that have an opinion. People prepared to stand up and say, "This is what I think." You put your name, you put your face on a poster, you put the poster up a lamppost, you put yourself out there. You run the risk of not getting elected or getting elected, but you have to. You're that type of person. Is that the sort of person could have paid a fine for saying what they think? I would have thought so. It shows you what sort of, you know, that where their priorities lie for people who stand, people who are members of the DUP, where their priorities lie. I still think it's a case of party before country.
The newsletter's political editor Sam McBride joining us in this breaking story this morning. Morning to you, Sam.
Morning, Steve.
What's your reaction when you've heard this?
I think there's two aspects to this, I suppose. People who are members of the DUP, when they joined the party, knew that they were joining a very centralised operation. That is, in many ways, one of the pillars, I suppose, on which the success of the DUP has been built over the last 20 years. That was how Peter Robinson organised the party. That is how Timothy Johnston, who was one of Peter Robinson's protégés, really, who is now their really key backroom figure there, has organised things for a very long time. So the fact, while the actual fines themselves might be a new development, the principle...
We don't believe they are a new development, by the way. We believe they've been around for quite a long time.
Well, certainly it would seem like they're being used more freely from what the person who spoke to you indicated. And I think that to me really suggests, I suppose, that the fact, A, that it's necessary to fine people pretty substantial sums here for what may be fairly minor infringements, is something which may hint at a breakdown of discipline. That is exacerbated, I suppose, by the very fact that the news of this has leaked. That's not something which happens if everybody in the party is singing off the same hymn sheet. So I think it perhaps does hint at other issues there. But I think people who joined the DUP, I suppose, fundamentally knew what they were getting into. They know that the party, to a certain extent, can guarantee them success as a politician. It can guarantee them a very significant vote in their area in many ways. But there are certain responsibilities which come with that.
Is this just about party discipline? Or do you agree, Sam, with Sir Alistair Graham when he says this undermines democracy?
I think Alistair Graham raises really profound questions there as to who is actually pulling the strings in the DUP. If you have a situation where people are being sent out to speak about something where they have the threat of financial punishment and very significant financial punishment hanging over them if they don't say the right thing, I think that it is very easy to see how that could be deeply unhealthy. We know that there have been all sorts of problems which have been unearthed by the RHI inquiry. That is just one small aspect of what Stormont did. But when you look at some of the behaviour there, when you look at some of the practices there, it is not conducive to good government, I don't think, to have people who might know about some of that, who might have concerns about some of that, not feeling the freedom to come forward with a genuine concern to the people who, let's not forget, put them where they are. In a democratic system, it is the people who are meant to be in charge. And the difficulty here is, I suppose, the temptation for the party is to try to control things as much as possible. That's understandable. But that has to always be held in tension with the fact that these people have their legitimacy, have their mandate from the public.
To be fair, Sam, to the DUP, they have a number of people who the public perception would be that they would be outspoken, and there's no evidence that they're not. You know, they've got, if I think in my mind, you know, you've got the likes of Sammy Wilson, you've got the likes of Ian Paisley, you've got the likes of Jim Wells, and I know he's lost the whip. You've got many others who, over the years, Gregory Campbell would be another example of, they say what they think. But in the hinterland, there's these threats that unless they have press office permission, then they won't be able to say what they think. Or is that not a threat? Is that just the rules of a party?
I think it's possibly more complex than it might appear at first glance. I think it's pretty widely known that there are some very senior figures within the DUP who speak quite freely. They do not consult the press office.
So they find every time.
Well, I think that is what, if I was a DUP member and I was facing a fine, I would be curious to know. I think there is a reality to this, that if you are a major party figure, if you're somebody who has 10 or 20,000 votes behind you, it's much more difficult to find somebody like that than it is to find somebody who maybe is clinging on in their seat, somebody who's maybe at threat of deselection, somebody where there's a bit more leverage. But certainly, I would be surprised if every time some of these people are speaking out, there's £1,000 coming into the party coffers. If there is, the party's a lot wealthier than we think.
03030 80 55 55. John in North Belfast. Morning, John.
Hello, Stephen. Stephen, all DUP MPs and MLAs have to adhere to the party whip. That's what they signed up to. So if anyone breaks ranks and makes statements that the party has not given them the right to say them statements, then of course they should be fined or the whip taken off them. Remember, the DUP started from the nil in the early 60s to where they're the biggest unionist party in Northern Ireland. And there's one reason for that: party discipline.
How come the other political parties aren't fining people then? They've all said they don't do it. So is there no discipline within any other political party?
That is the rules that they sign up to when they join the DUP. Any other big organisation, be it the NHS or the BBC, all work to the terms and conditions, and if they step outside those terms and conditions, they lose their jobs.
But there is a difference, is there not, in a political representative, because they are telling the public what they think. They seek a mandate at election time based on who they are. They present themselves as individuals. They tell you about their background, their morality, their ethics, how they will, as individuals, fight for their constituents. So when a DUP person, Malachy, is then on the media in any form, be it that they're talking to Sam McBride in the newsletter, talking to Alison Morris in the Irish News, the Belfast Telegraph, the Nolan Radio Show, UTV, are we hearing what they think, or are we hearing what the press office is telling them to think? Malachy?
What we're hearing this morning, all we are hearing is the message of the press office. I mean, the interviewee that you had at the beginning, the anonymous one, said specifically that you're told what to say. Now, Alison Morrison made a very good point, that if you have a party which is concentrating all the thinking at the centre and is not sharing it, then you obviously have far greater difficulty in a moment like February's negotiations breaking down, where the party doesn't know what's happening, because just a small group of people at the middle have been conducting the negotiations with Sinn Féin, and they're so estranged from their own party because they've treated them with so little respect that when it comes time to share with them the deal that they would like to make, then that deal becomes impossible because there's so much worry about it. I'm intrigued also by Sam's observation that there are certainly people like Sammy Wilson, Gregory Campbell, Ian Paisley, who are big personalities in themselves, you know.
Well, it would be interesting for if the DUP would tell us or not whether any of those individuals, those big personalities as you describe them, Malachy, have been fined.
Well, we're not hearing much from them. That's what I'm also saying. You know, we see them obviously in Ian Paisley and Sammy Wilson in Parliament when they're in debates and so on. But we're not actually hearing that much from them at all. I mean, they are part of the Nolan boycott too. And another point I would want to make is
Hold on a moment. Those individuals who you've just named, I'm sure they would have a position themselves that they're working within the party confines, and they're not part of any boycott.
Well, you know yourself whether they're accepting invitations to appear in the programme. I don't make the calls to them. But another point that I would want to make is that if I'm a politician, what I want to do is sell myself to the public, and the best means that I have available to me to do that is the media. So it is part of my own career journey. It's part of my, it's one of the needs of my own career that I should be in the media, speaking to my constituents through that and familiarising them with my ideas so that when an election comes round, I have a better chance of being voted for. If the very party that I am working for and giving my time to is undermining my relationship with the media and thereby with my constituents, then, you know, then I really, you know, why would I be part of that party? Why would a party want to damage me in that way? And how can it be right that a party which depends on people being able to go out and sell themselves to the public, how can it be right for them to restrain them from going on to the media and selling themselves?
Sam McBride, what do you think chat will be within the DUP about this? Do you think members will continue to pay these fines, or do you think there might be an uprising now, or what do you think will happen now that this is public that they've been doing this?
I suspect the first thing will be a lot of people going around asking each other, have you been fined? There'll be lots of intrigue there. I think your caller there raised a very interesting question. He quite rightly said that a party has to have disciplinary structures. It has to have some sort of ability to have a coherent message if it's to actually function as a party rather than just a collection of individuals. I think the question is how that is done. And traditionally at Stormont, all of the parties, but I think the DUP was certainly known for this, really used some of the office holder posts there, which have money attached to them. So if you're the chair of a Stormont committee, you get about £10,000 or £11,000 as a means of keeping people in check. So if you stepped out of line, you knew there was some sort of sanction. And I think what we might be seeing here, if these fines are becoming more prevalent within the DUP, is that the absence of Stormont, as well as the weakened position, I suppose, of Arlene Foster as the leader, really have made that traditional way of keeping members in check break down to a certain extent. And in that sense, they're now struggling to try to keep people on board, because when you're having to hand out £1,000 fines to somebody in your party, it's pretty difficult to see how that is somebody who is fundamentally on the same page as you. And we know that Jim Wells was really quite upfront about what he was doing. He challenged the party, and he actually said when they withdrew the whip from him, which would traditionally be the ultimate sanction, really the nuclear option within a political party, he really said, "What difference does it make? There is no Stormont."
Well, you would have thought. You mentioned Jim Wells there. You would have thought that if Jim Wells was still working under the whip, and therefore was still working under this party structure, that he'd need a mortgage by this stage for the fines.
I mean, I suppose there's the sense that if Stormont doesn't exist in any meaningful sense, what control does the party have over those individuals? And that I think might be at the heart of this.
John in South Belfast. Morning, John.
Stephen, to see earlier on when you first started this programme and you played on actor's voice that said, you know, say about the DUP, Mark, who's it said?
Yes.
He said that they're told what to say. They're told what to say. It just brought me back to the time that you interviewed Ian Paisley.
The late Ian Paisley, the son,
Junior, Ian Paisley Junior. When you interviewed him, he called you a pompous ass one time.
Well, I've.
Was that his personal opinion, or was that the party whip telling him the party telling him to say it?
Might have been both. To be fair, I can't recollect that. I can't recollect.
Well, I know you forget things that you know you don't want to remember, but it did happen. He called you a pompous ass.
Well,
right? And
well, maybe he was right.
You know, Bill, I thought...
What's your point? How do you feel about it? Let's focus this just before we wrap this. How do you feel about a political party controlling a message to the extent that they will fine MLAs for saying what they think unless it's approved by the press office?
Well, listen, you see, why is anybody surprised that this has come from the DUP? Why is anybody surprised? You know, it seems to me that from the Joint Conservative Party, you know, or from the whole, they have the Conservative Party over the barrel, the public, you know. And see, because of that, I don't know, their heads have grew twice the size of as what they should be, because they think they rule everything now. They think they rule the whole of Britain now, you know. And they're saying all these things, and they're coming out and saying things that they're getting away with.
Okay, John, thank you very much indeed for your call this morning, and thanks to Malachy and Alison Morris and Sam McBride, and we'll have more details about this story. We can see more information coming into us, actually, as is often the case with a story like this. Other people contact the Dolan Show, so I'm sure there will be follow-ups in the days to come.